Welcome back to the NSFW podcast right here on Balls Up. If you're listening on the podcast app, make sure to review and rate us 5 stars. If you're watching on YouTube, go over and download the podcast. Get us some extra listens. Make sure you hit like and subscribe as well whilst you're on YouTube. Gentlemen, there's no corporate Dave today. He's like legit at a corporate meeting.
He is, actually.
He's one corporate stage away from being at a corporate retreat.
And this is our earliest podcast filming, isn't it?
He's been ill, though, corporate Dave. He has been ill. Yeah, he's had to get the antibiotics on him. Not being particularly well. This is our early one, though, isn't it?
Yeah, that's where we all look a little bit tired.
We're shooting this at 10 in the morning, so it's not actually that early. But we have to do it because these boys are off on a modelling shoot. What's happening? Tell the people at home.
Go on, Sam.
Well, obviously, you know, I did the Giacomo shoot about...
Obviously.
2 weeks
they
ago.
Won't they won't know. They won't know.
We spoke about it on the podcast.
Oh, what, on the live?
Did we?
We spoke about it on the podcast.
Which podcast?
I don't remember.
I don't think you did.
I did. I literally went like that on the table and said, I got these for free from the Giacomo shoot I just did. Do you not remember this?
Oh, still maybe. Still cool. Got them on.
Still wearing them. Anyway, so actually, Dave Warner got scouted because obviously he fits the bill pretty well.
The Giacomo,
XL to 5XL.
they said, can we also bring Dave along for the next one? So that's what we're going to be doing today. A bit of fitting today. It's not actually the shoot today.
Yeah, it's the fitting.
We're getting fitted for the clothes.
I'll be inside leg, bit of cuppage.
Getting fitted with the clothes.
What a ridiculous waste of time.
Why would they not just bring like 2 sizes, either side of your size?
Because they might have to tailor it in.
What? But then you're not going to get Giacomo clothes tailored,
this is
are you?
Sky One.
No, but it's also, I don't know, but I'm, do they tailor them?
They tailored my coat.
Well, that's a scoop, isn't it?
No.
So that means what
they brought it in at the seam.
So does that mean what you buy is not the tailored fit you see on this is a scoop here. This is like, you've just uncovered Giacomo.
Well, no, not really.
He's backtracking now.
So you boys have got a fitting today.
Yeah.
And then when's shoot day one?
The day after. Yeah. So tomorrow is the shoot.
And what is it? Is it static images, video?
No, it's video that will play video, at the start of, you know, like at the start of the show where it says like, oh,
Sky One brought to you by Giacomo.
Yeah.
Oh really?
It'll be me and Sav sitting there having a chat. It's literally we had to give them all of our sizes yesterday, so there is no tailoring. They'll just today figure out what fits us and what we want to wear, and then tomorrow we wear
and
it.
And basically, you're going to be sat there, what, talking?
Yeah, so it's like candid, just isn't it? Chat. It's like two other guys coming in with us. One who I met on the first year, obviously, my model mate now.
Yeah.
Sam's big in the model game now.
Big in the model game, mate. Shout out Ben, actually, he watches the stuff we do now. So we're going to be doing that today and tomorrow. Bit apprehensive, though, I'm not going to lie.
Why are we worried about?
Because it's like, what they want us to do is have like natural chat, which is going to be fine when it's me and you. Mm. But obviously, Ben's cool. I don't know what the other guy's saying. He might be a proper weirdo.
Brilliant. Say that on the podcast. Decent.
Yeah. But it's kind of hard to do.
It's difficult having natural chat. He's probably going to be a proper nice guy.
It's forced enough on it.
Brilliant.
So when you get in that environment, it's going to be really not natural.
Yeah, I think we'll just play it as it goes.
It's your first modelling job, isn't it?
It is my first modelling job, yeah.
Oh, it's not mine, though. What was yours when you were 3?
Yeah. Go on, what was yours? I'll tell you what, though, saying that, I assumed, because I said no
saying
to
that, it's actually my 10th.
No, I said no to Giacomo originally, just because of conscious in me image.
But now Jermaine Genius is the ambassador, I'm all over it.
But then they asked again, so I said, right, okay, cool, we'll do it. But then I put it in the group chat of all the boys, thinking, right, this will be a laugh.
Yeah,
so the boys, I'm doing thing for Giacomo, thinking I'll get a bit of stick here. They was, what do you call it? Supportive as anything. Absolutely loved it. Yeah. So shout out, cheers for the love, chaps.
That's nice, isn't it?
Didn't get one joke in there. I was thinking I'll go start taking the piss out myself here.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Then we'll leave it to us.
How's your week been?
Mine. It's been pretty hectic.
You was in Paris, weren't
you? I was in Paris for a couple of days. Like a Snapchat conference, corporate Joe in the house.
Yeah! It's all media.
Which is pretty good. All media. And moving into a new house as well, isn't it?
It's lovely as well. And the address is?
Not saying. But in London, yeah. First time moving out, like it, just me and my girlfriend.
That is sick.
Just you and the big sea dog.
Yeah. So,
that is sick, though.
Bit of pressure there, isn't there?
Well, you've lived together for a while,
but in a house share. It's just different doing it like one-on-one.
Have you been, for the last couple of years, have you been passing off mess as someone else in the house?
Yeah.
And now you're worried it's only you to blame.
Big time. Yeah. But, yeah. I don't know, it's just different, isn't it, to move into like a one-to-one house. It feels like a big step. I had to say to her, I'm still going out. Oh, still yeah. Going out on weekends.
Is it one bed or you got a spare room?
One bed.
Oh, so you've also
can't
stopped
a spare room in London.
No, mad. But I thought you might have, you've actually managed to knock it on the head that you have people crashing at yours. A couple of sofas, I imagine.
No, I've actually think I persuaded her into getting a futon.
Decent. I'll tell you what.
Sonny be there, will he? Living for the weekend.
Actually, I'm actually only like four doors down from Temps and Zach.
Oh, really?
Oh, for real?
And Kieran. So they can just stay there, I see.
That's mad. So you're all on the same road now.
This little crew.
Taking over.
This little crew.
Taking over Brixton.
It's just pure fluke.
Shout out to whoever it was that came up to Zach on a Friday night out and said, you was at a Kanye West event, weren't you?
Yeah.
And came up to Zach and said, It was so good of you lot to still come out with the normal people.
Yeah.
As if you mean anything.
And then, what is he talking about? That Kanye West night was jokes. I was so rough on that. On the Saturday, so we went, just a bit of backstory, on the last Friday we went to like a Kanye West night at Electric Brixton, Kanye, whatever it is. West night at Electric Brixton, which we thought would be a laugh. And it was pretty decent, to be fair. But the next day, I was an absolute disgrace.
Yeah.
Got up at 11, I was vomiting everywhere.
You had a table booked for a meal, didn't you?
I had a table booked at Rules in central London, which is like...
It's the oldest restaurant in London, proper fancy.
Really fancy. I promised I was taking my girlfriend there on the night, and we had like an 8 o'clock booking. And I rolled out of bed at like 12 o'clock. She was already disappointed with me at this stage, because half the day's gone at this stage, you know, on a Saturday. I'm 12 o'clock, I'm absolutely dripping. I'm awful. I roll into the toilet, chuck up everywhere. I was like, I just went to a club, I'll be honest, Rules and that one then.
So 8 hours you couldn't get yourself together?
I just couldn't get myself together. It just wasn't happening on that Saturday. It just wasn't happening. I said, look, Chloe, I'll be honest, it's not happening. Can you ring up and cancel?
So you book it,
yeah,
to do a nice thing, and then put yourself further in the deep end.
Why?
By not going.
But I couldn't. I didn't go. She wasn't angry because she wasn't feeling that keen either.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so she said maybe she was just trying to make me feel better, which would have been the nice thing to do.
Which but is lovely.
We ended up staying and getting a curry anyway. But
oh, that sounds wicked.
But like,
I mean, that went down well, didn't it?
Oh, not in my stomach.
Why did you get
good
a curry?
God.
After you'd been chucking up
the madras as well.
Madras? What's wrong with you?
I know. It
falling out of your like empty
it
old
came
radiator.
Out of me the next day so bad. Oh. But yeah, that night was decent actually. This kid coming up to Zach, that's a
Well, yeah, apparently the myth offered him out.
Yeah, apparently so.
Apparently, which is pretty funny.
Went to shake hands with him, the guy rejected or ignored him, and he weren't happy at all.
He's yeah, lucky.
He said, "You know I am, because no one else does."
Mm. I know.
But it's lucky kept for him,
really.
A secret.
It is lucky for him, really, because obviously with the black belt in taekwondo, now it could have got kind of messy.
It could have got messy. It could have got kind of messy.
Pretty funny.
He was already putting on his gi.
Did you boys get out to anything on the weekend? Go out.
We were here all night, live streaming.
Yeah,
Saturday.
On a Saturday.
We'll come on to it. I guess that might be a nice place for us to open. I imagine.
We could open, but we'll start by saying. Also, I just wanted to talk about the moving house thing quickly. One thing I've found when living with a significant other without anybody else, with no house or anything like that.
Is this advice?
No, it's not even advice. It's more just like there's a weight lifted, a massive weight lifted. Like
when there's not other people in the house.
Yeah, on the relationship, because a lot of the time. Like the tensions and everything going on inside the house between you and your girl might be because they're pissed off with what the other people are doing, but they can't take it out on them. So it all ends up on you, if that makes sense. Or it all ends up on them.
Sometimes you're always looking to the other one to fix it. If
that's
it's something that's more geared towards that
person. And I don't know if you've ever lived, I'm sure you have, you've lived with people where your missus doesn't get along with the people you're living with.
All the time.
And that is a huge problem because you will feel it. You'll feel it big, big time.
Trust me, been there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I feel like... Yeah, I'm actually really looking forward to it. Hamill said a similar thing to me.
Yeah.
That when it's just like the one-to-one, it's like...
Yeah, but say, Hamill says a weight was lifted. Before he moved in with his missus, he was sleeping on a waterbed, wasn't he?
Hamill, for the first like 6 months in London, owned a room but refused to buy a bed. So just bought a blow-up bed and put it on the floor.
Yeah.
And he
no wonder it was nice when he moved
room,
in with his missus.
And his missus was coming down on like weekends or whatever.
On a waterbed.
Well, not a waterbed, a blow-up bed. An airbed with like a mattress.
That's quality.
Imagine going home every night and having to blow up your bed.
That's quality.
And we went on a night out once and I can't remember who it was, where we went or anything. And
it's a good story then.
Chris, we're going back to Chris's. We'd gone to Chris's and dropped our stuff off, like bags and coats and that.
Mm.
And then gone out. And because Chris lives like quite central in where we was going out. And he was living with his missus at this time. His missus has moved down. So we went out. We went to... Phonox in Brixton, which is like quite a It's more of like a techno house vibe. And we came back at like 3-4 in the morning. It was like me, maybe Temps, Mikey. Hamill had gone way before. It's not his type of music. He's more of a sort of Kasabian man, isn't it?
Kasabian.
And we came back at like 4 in the morning and we're like buzzing on his intercom outside.
I remember this.
There's no answer. Yeah. And I was like, this is a nightmare. Like, all of Mikey and everyone's keys and stuff is in there. Oh, my keys is in there, my wallet's in there. So I'm like, right, I'm not having it. So I've got up over the fence, over his fence, got into like his apartment bit and gone up to his front door. And I just think I'm like banging on it. I'm just like, I want my keys. Banging on it like this. He comes to the door, livid. What are you doing? His missus is behind him, right, shouting, what the hell is going on? She had to be at work at 6 in the morning. It's 4 in the morning then. Absolute disaster. She was abusing me. I could hear her abusing me from the bedroom. It's so funny. I mean, it wasn't the time. Hamill sent me the dirtiest text message, just like, you rat bastard. Don't ever knock on my door again.
Keys?
I got my keys. Went in, sweet. Went chicken well with the boys and then went home.
Decent. Sounds like a good night.
That does.
It was a good night. It was a good night. Should we go on to stories then?
I think we start with Savs, because we kind of hinted on it, didn't we?
You can start with my one. I just wanted to sort of talk to you guys about the aftermath of the Conor McGregor-Khabib fight, because I feel as if on the night, you know, what happened happened, but a lot of things have been said since from both camps. I want to get you guys' opinion on, number one, what the consequences of his actions should be.
Okay.
And number two, whether you think they should have a rematch.
First of all, we should say head over and watch our...
Go and watch it.
We live streamed the whole thing,
our
reactions to it. But obviously not to watch the whole thing. But if you go onto the video, there's the top comment is a timestamp for basically when it all kicked off. If you want to watch the two fights beforehand, then, you know, watch the whole thing. But because, I mean, to be honest, one of my biggest points, just before we get onto McGregor-Khabib, was that I was quite upset because I think it really overshadowed that Ferguson Pettis was an incredible fight.
Yeah,
it was a good fight. Absolute quality. I mean, it ended abruptly because of a broken hand or whatever, but it was two guys that, for while it was going on, were both bloodied and were staring at each other like laughing and smiling, as in they were loving it.
Yeah.
And it was great to watch.
There's a great shot of Pettis in Ferguson's guard with his hand on his chest, and he's got his tongue out. Remember the shot? And he's screaming, and there's just blood everywhere. Yeah. And it's like, this guy is animalistic as hell.
At the end of that fight, there was going to be like 4 or 5 iconic photos coming out of that fight.
Yeah.
And it's a shame, because I feel like that kind of got overshadowed by
what happened
after.
Yeah. I mean, I only caught I only watched the highlights of the Khabib Conor thing. So it's a little bit different for me. I didn't really see the fight. I've seen the blows and obviously the choke, but I've only really seen the aftermath.
Right.
So
in terms of the fight, Khabib
battered him.
He controlled him.
And what was sort of unequivocal about the whole fight is that Khabib played him at his own and Conor's own game pretty.
Yeah. From I was listening to Johnny Kavanagh on Joe Rogan's podcast, the MMA show, yesterday, and he was talking about his game plan going into the fight. Mm-hmm. And he said the first two rounds, we basically knew we couldn't win.
Damage limitation.
Yeah, he was literally he knew he was going to get taken down, and it was just do not waste energy.
Yeah.
And then in the third round, he was going to try and hit him. I don't know whatever it happened.
Weirdly, the first round, we actually said it during the live, didn't we? Conor did well to limit how much sort of he expended during it. I mean, he was taken down, but in the first round or two, Khabib was in control, but he didn't advance his position much.
If you go back and watch other Khabib fights, it's the only time really where he hasn't done anything to his opponent in the first two rounds. Second round was a bit more, he had a bit more to him, but in the first round, he sort of just was on top of him the whole time, and I think he was just wearing him down.
Because like
McGregor just wanted to
get
to the stage where
he
didn't have enough energy to then fight back on the takedown and fight back when he was in control. Because by the second and third rounds, he was already mounting him.
Which round did he land the overhand right in?
Second round.
That might be, was it the second?
Because he survived the second round. And then he finished him in the third, didn't he?
Finished him in the fourth.
Well, he finished him in the fourth.
Because the third round was the round where Khabib almost... basically decided to not go for a takedown and played him hand to hand.
I think he did that to make a statement.
Yeah.
He wanted to say to people, look, this is your golden boy, yeah? Like, he's supposed to be the best boxer in the UFC. Mm. Come on. Like, I just knocked him down. He actually knocked him down.
Knocked him down. I might be wrong, but from what I can remember, so then, McGregor's left is his biggest thing. I don't think McGregor landed a punch with his left.
He didn't land a significant strike in the first round, did it?
The only thing he landed, which I was like, oh, okay, he hit him, was an uppercut. He hit him with a right-hand uppercut.
And, but he didn't get the left once, did he, really?
When he hit him, it wasn't like a significant strike. Like, he didn't left cross him or anything like that. He didn't hit him with what he wanted to, obviously.
So we know there's going to be a rematch. There's definitely going to be a rematch, 100%.
See, now, this is my problem with there being a rematch. There wasn't enough from McGregor's side to warrant it.
But there's going to be a rematch, 100%.
Maybe there will. Let's say there will be.
There's too much press and money to be made.
I get the press and money side of it. But the one thing I said is that in terms of the way the UFC works, there's understandable cause for a rematch if Conor was the champ. Because if you're the champion, you lose your belt, you get a rematch to win it back. But if you're a challenger, and you lose, like, flat out...
He was the challenger, but he vacated originally, didn't he?
He did.
So he technically, you could say...
You could claim that, yeah, I imagine, yeah. So
the worry is that because Ferguson had beat Pettis, they can't really make an argument not to give Ferguson the fight before Conor. They can't. Yeah. Like, if they do that, then it's just blatantly...
Geared towards
Conor,
boy.
Which I'll be honest with you, they've done throughout his career anyway. They've always made it easier for him to get a title shot and get what he wanted. So I wouldn't put it past them to give him a shot. But then my problem with it is, it's not that there shouldn't be a rematch with it. It's just going to be the same thing again. There's nothing you can do in a year that is going to help you against Khabib. There's nothing you can do.
A lot of people were saying one of the biggest things as well is people saying like, what belief is there in Conor after that fight? Because he got...
Do you think it's because he underestimated Khabib, though?
Well, there's the one thing is that people have been saying that the one way that he could potentially get fans sort of back on side as thinking it's legit is if he came out and basically, I don't really agree with this, but came out flat out, said, I was not prepared in the way I should have been, and I'm going to go train for a year, and I'll come back ready to beat him. But it's like... I don't know if that's...
I think that
would come across as an excuse.
I think the rematch will happen. I think it's too much
maybe,
money.
Maybe it will.
There's like...
Do you think
like,
it's right on the UFC to go for a rematch?
Yeah, 100%. It's a money game. $50 million purse Conor took. And actually, Dana White actually said in an interview that it could have, dependent on pay-per-view sales, if it pushed over 3.5 mil or 3 mil, he could have actually earned the same numbers that he earned for the Floyd Mayweather fight in that fight, McGregor. There's no way, if you think that's how much, let's say he's earning between $50 and $100 million for that one fight, there is no way on hell that the UFC aren't making probably 5 to 10x that.
Do you reckon they're making that on a rematch?
They're making more on a rematch based off the back of that one.
I don't think
based on the aftermath.
Yeah.
They're losing the spectacle, though. That's the only problem. People are not going to be watching it to find out what's going to happen. Mm. People know what's going to happen now. It's the same way...
I don't think they know what's going
to
happen.
I think people will be watching it to see if something else happens around the fight.
Yeah.
That's the only thing they'll be watching it for,
will happen.
But maybe. I don't think you can convince Khabib to fight outside of Russia again now. I don't think you can. And I don't think Conor will. I don't think he will agree to fight... Khabib in Russia.
I don't know where I saw it, but is the headline true about Khabib apparently saying, me GSP or he'll retire undefeated?
So basically, Josh Thompson, who is Khabib's training partner, came out and said that, I've spoken to Khabib, and if he beats Conor, he doesn't want to fight in the UFC again, unless it's against GSP. That's the only fight he wants after Conor.
Yeah, he'll say that until somebody goes, there's $50 million on the line here, Khabib.
Maybe. It depends how much they tax him. Because I'm hearing that they might be taking 20% of whatever he's earned off that McGregor fight. They've held his purse all night.
Yeah, exactly. So if he takes...
His purse. It's not UFC holding it, though, is it?
It's Nevada.
The Nevada State Commissioner holding it, yeah.
But if he only takes, let's say, 60% of what he should have taken on this, he's going to be even more keen for the rematch to earn a full purse.
Maybe. I don't think money's is his objective, though. I don't think it is.
I think when you've been punched in the head that many times, it is.
Maybe.
Let me ask, just because you're the biggest UFC fan out of us, all of us here.
Mm-hmm.
After everything that happened there, what's just your thoughts on the situation and what it means for UFC and the sport as a whole?
Well, Khabib needs to hold a suspension and a big tax. But like, he needs to be taxed massively for what he did because he initiated everything. Whether or not Conor said some horrific things in the build-up to that fight, and part of me understands the way Khabib reacted, even if it was a bit ludicrous. But what it means for the UFC, they can't use any of that footage to promote a fight that is not between Khabib and McGregor. If you're promoting Khabib versus PSG, that footage means nothing. If you're promoting Nate versus Conor 3, that footage doesn't mean anything. Mm. Right? So unless they are making a rematch, that is a massive L that the UFC is taking there. Number one, because it was a security disaster. Let's say Khabib's people actually wanted to kill Conor, they could have killed him that night. Mm. If they had a shank and they went into the ring, they could have killed him there and then. Mm.
Like, especially the lad from behind in the red.
Like, they could have killed him, essentially. Like, there was no security. Like, for about maybe 5 seconds, there was like a 5 second gap where
they didn't get
there. Where there was nobody around Conor.
Conor gets whacked from behind and then whacked from in front.
Yeah. There was nobody around him.
I will say this as well, just because, and I'll be honest, I pretty much think everyone's at fault in the whole thing that happened. So this isn't in no way standing up for McGregor, because I don't agree with that at all. But just to argue a point that a few people have been saying, there's a lot of people who have been commenting saying that, oh, McGregor threw the first punch on Khabib's team when McGregor was trying to get out of the octagon and the other fella arrived next to him.
He was following Khabib.
But this is what I was saying, is that you're saying he threw the first punch. McGregor is on the edge of the octagon because of Khabib jumping out and attacking his mate.
Yeah.
So that's not the first punch.
Yeah.
That's the melee of what's happening.
The flying eagle.
Even though they're in two different situations, they're all one situation. Yeah. So I don't agree with any of them. The one thing, which I thought was an interesting point, someone said it on Hot 97 when they were talking about, I think it was Rosenberg, I'm not sure, but was talking about and said that there's a lot of blame to be placed at, he cast it as Dana White, but the UFC, because of what he said was that, correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, but McGregor attacks the bus, gets taken to court, gets fined and whatever. The UFC, as far as I know, took no action against Conor themselves. Took no, even though that was at their event in the arena where they're hosting.
You say the UFC took no action?
The UFC took no action.
With the bus thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then you've got McGregor and Khabib in the build-up to their fight. Now, I know obviously this is the way this stuff goes, but this will make sense when I get to my point at the end. McGregor saying like extremely offensive things about his religion, his culture, his family, where he comes from, all that kind of stuff. No action is taken again by the UFC on that. And then you've got things like on the face-off beforehand, when I know this stuff happens all the time, but McGregor goes for the kick to try and kick Khabib and gets pulled away.
He wasn't trying to kick him, though.
No, but still, the point I'm making, which is the point they were making, is if you look at all of those situations, they were saying that the UFC has to hold the blame for this because
they let Conor
if you want your sport to actually move off of the fringes of mainstream sport and move into the realms of competing with other big headline sports in America and around the world, you have to start having your competitors act with a certain amount of discipline and respect. I know obviously people are going to hyper fight. They're always going to hyper fight. But there's a way to do it without crossing lines that can lead to animosity like this. And they were saying that the UFC has to take a lot of it on its own shoulders and say, if we want to be taken legitimately going forward, they need to address how they control these things.
I actually disagree. Yeah. I actually think that the only way to hyper fight is to do that.
I will say that's not me agreeing with that. I'm saying what they say. I'll be honest, I don't really know what my opinion is.
I think there's a reason that Conor is... We all can clearly see that Conor is not the best fighter in the UFC. But there's a very clear reason that he's the best paid athlete in the UFC. Yeah. And that is because of the stuff that happens outside the octagon, the trash talking, throwing things into buses. And without...
Okay, but with the trash talking, you don't draw a line at religion?
See, this is the problem, right?
I don't think the UFC can draw a line on anything in trash talking. Because if you draw a line on one thing, you've got to draw a line on everything.
Think about Tyson. Think about Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson told people that he was going to eat Lennox Lewis's babies, right? Nobody looks back and thinks he was a nutter for saying that. It hyped the fight. Like, there's some mad things that people can't say certain things, and I wouldn't say certain things. But at the same time, there's in every situation, in every fight, there's a heel and there's a hero, right? I think, potentially, Conor turned into the heel in this one. He's always been the hero up to this point.
Yeah.
And for the first time, people were like, ooh, I don't know about that.
Yeah, pretty close. But I remember in
the
build-up...
people thought Tyson was a nutter.
People did think Tyson was a nutter, yeah, but nobody talks about it now.
But I remember in the build-up to the Aldo fight, I remember Conor saying that he was going to cut Aldo's head off and carry it through the streets of Rio.
Yeah.
Like, this is not his first rodeo in terms of, like, offensive stuff
But that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying it just based on this fight. I'm just saying that, do you not... I understand your point about, obviously, that's building the fight. But... if you look at some of the other biggest fights that have gone on in loads of in boxing, whatever, people are able to hype a fight without going to the limits.
Floyd Mayweather says some absolutely outlandish stuff, and he's again the highest paid athlete in the world. So I think we're not talking about sport like sports. He's the highest paid athlete.
I know that plays into it, but that's also you're talking about someone that's 50-0 or 51-0, whatever it is as well.
That's the point. You can't be like, for example. Colby Covington is talking more than Conor is at the moment, but because people not rate him as a fighter, he's not getting the same hype. You can only get the hype and get that sort of notoriety if you're a good fighter and you can talk, right? So,
behind the scenes, UFC are egging Conor on to talk.
Well, of course.
But this is what I'm saying. So, and I don't mean this to put you in a position on it because that's not my aim at all. Yeah. But what that conversation's come down to then is, so we're saying it's okay to go after whatever you want about someone.
No, I'm not. No, I'm just saying that you can't regulate. I don't think you can regulate.
I'm not saying it's okay. Yeah, I'm also saying him as a human shouldn't be saying it. I completely agree. It's incorrect to blast somebody's religion and their family. That's not right on a human level. Yeah. But the UFC cannot regulate that.
But don't you even think that it's one of those things where UFC have to be seen to act on it?
No.
The regulation can be like...
I don't.
...can be so small that it doesn't even like, affect the fighter, but they have to be seen to act.
This is
it,
what would happen.
To make themselves look legitimate.
I would pay... Nah, I don't think there's any problem with it being legitimate. That's their job in terms of legitimisation is to police the rules in the cage. And in terms and to sell the fight, that's the fighter's jobs, really.
Okay, yeah, cool. Fine.
Like, I think I would... Like, I'd pay... to watch a psychopath serial killer go in the ring with a tiger. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's the people's choice to pay. If they like the hype around the fight,
100%,
it's the UFC's job to protect the people in the cage
I just think that what's happened here is, in terms of the trash talking before, someone overstepped a mark, and it's led to stuff happening outside of what
but
they're
that's
doing.
Him as a human overstepping a mark.
Yeah, it is. I think...
Yeah, but...
And if the UFC have to tell you not to offend someone's religion, then you're not a particularly nice person.
Yeah, it's like, okay,
for example... But look at any other sport. The commissioning body of any other sport would act on it.
I don't think they would.
I'm not saying they'd ban someone, you would be hit with a fine.
You would not get the WBA, WBC, or the IBF, or the WBO saying anything to a boxer, saying you can't be saying things like that.
So if a boxer come out and offended someone for being either Muslim or...
But what you have to remember is he didn't actually say anything about his religion. He offered him whiskey, which is not... You shouldn't do that. You can't be doing that. But he didn't say anything about
Islam. That's a fair
point.
It's not... Yeah,
if he'd openly gone... like anti-Semite.
Exactly.
Do you know what? That's a very good point. That is a very good point.
It's a difficult one. But it's all just selling a fight. It's just all packaging a fight. Yeah, yeah. And that's the reason that Conor gets the pay packets he does. And that's the reason every fighter in the UFC wants to fight Conor McGregor.
I think that's the other thing is McGregor signed a 6-fight deal before this fight. Yeah. So there's going to be a rematch. Because in all honesty, what 5 other fights can you put McGregor in after that mean anything?
And did you watch the interview on the Mac Life with Conor McGregor when he talks about the week before, two fights, I can't remember which UFCs it was, two fighters dropped out, and both times he went, I'll fill it, I'll fill the card. But the UFC said no because they didn't have time to promo.
He's a maniac. He fought... The only other person that you can say... does things like that is BJ Penn. BJ Penn used to fight at 155, but he fought Lyoto Machida at 205. Like, he's fought people 5 weight classes above his weight. Like, when he fought Nate Diaz at like 170, everyone was like, what's he doing? Why is he doing that? It's because he just wants to fight. He's a flipping you know, it's like the stereotypical Irishman. They're just up for a fight whenever. Do you know what I'm saying?
Habib McGregor 2 will be by far the biggest pay-per-view fight. Sale ever.
Oh, it will be
by
huge.
By far the it biggest pay packet of any UFC fighter in history.
100%.
It will be hyped for like about a year by the UFC. Yeah. And all of the footage of him jumping out the cage, doing the flying eagle, all of that will be included.
And then the same thing's going to
happen
again.
Habib will probably get a two-fight suspension or something like that, where I imagine he might end up losing the belt.
If he get,
he'll get 40% of his pay packet taken. And Conor will probably do 2 to 3 fights before it happens.
If they make him relinquish the belt, then it kind of makes the whole fight redundant. Like, they shouldn't have... The only way they're going to do this, right, is if they hand him a suspension, which is like 9 months, or a year suspension, right?
Yeah.
Which, in turn, will make him relinquish it. They won't strip him of it. But if you're inactive for that period of time, then they'll take the belt off you anyway.
What about bringing in an interim? What's the grounds for doing that? Because then you build up a champ versus champ fight with someone else.
You could do that, but in the part they love doing that. For some reason, they love an interim champ. To me, it doesn't really make sense. If you're going to give the interim champ to somebody, then you're going to have to give it to Tony Ferguson, and then that means Conor's got to fight Tony, which he won't get until he's fought either Poirier or Nate. So there's at least 3 or 4 fights, 2, 3, 4 fights have to happen before Khabib and McGregor see each other again.
Yeah, but that's going to be the most epic fight.
But I mean, I think that's also going to be the journey that the UFC tell now.
18 months. It's almost Conor like we've got to get
UFC have got to get us to Khabib Conor 2 now,
which I think is pointless because it's the same thing's going to happen again. Like, he's just going to maul him.
In terms of the fight, there's going to be no difference.
Yeah, and we'll stream it again.
Yeah. The only way, we said this, the same with the fight just gone.
Yeah.
There's always the potential, just like the Aldo fight, there's always the potential that it starts and in the first 10 seconds, McGregor catches something out of nowhere and it's over because he's got that in his locker. Yeah. But if that fight is a fight and isn't some out of nowhere thing, it's Khabib's every time.
Yeah. Did you see the interview with Khabib's dad or read that interview when he's like, he said whatever he was the UFC punishment is mine is going to be way more.
His is going to be worse. Yeah.
I don't know what he's going to do. What is he going to do? Break his arms? Like, you know what I mean? Beating.
Yeah.
Did you ridiculous. See the footage of Khabib just in his house in his robes with pizza watching him beat McGregor
after the fight back?
He's watching himself beat McGregor
in his robes, just sitting there
like
watching
a bad
it.
Bad man.
Loads of them, and he's just chilling, just chilling with a couple of mates. It was quality.
It's hilarious.
Yeah, but I tell you what though, like incredible hype following that event. Yeah, like
unbelievable hype following that event.
The craziest high I've ever had after watching a fight.
It was mad.
I've never felt that buzz after a fight before.
Especially when they're all jumping into the crowd.
We all said as soon as our live stream finished, we was like, right, we've got to go and watch it again now.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, this is one thing that hasn't been mentioned yet. If they can bring Dylan Danis over into the UFC from Bellator, that would make for a good journey. If you get him to do two or three fights and then fight Khabib as well, that could make for an interesting story.
Yeah, surely get this show.
No, he wouldn't. I don't think he would. I think him and Conor, Dylan Danis and Conor, are two totally different fighters.
He's
Dylan
a jiu-jitsu Danis, expert, is he?
But he's, like, when you talk about jiu-jitsu expert, he's not an MMA jiu-jitsu expert. Mm. He's a jiu-jitsu world champion just in jiu-jitsu. Mm. So, like, he's not the type of guy who's learnt jiu-jitsu to fight MMA. Mm-mm. He learnt jiu-jitsu to go and fight jiu-jitsu practitioners. So, if Khabib takes him down, he's in his world. That's his world. The ground game is his world. So I think that would be an interesting fight to see. Yeah.
It would be an interesting fight.
Should we move on then? What's your topic?
Yeah, but I'll tell you what though, let us know in the comments below what your thoughts on it. I mean, I'll be honest, as I say, I haven't really made my mind up on what I think about it. So I'm kind of playing devil's advocate with what I thought was an interesting point made.
Well, Conor definitely took it too far in the build up at this point.
Yes, 100%.
100%.
But let us know what you think. A couple of days have passed. What's your thoughts? It will be a week past now, won't it, when this goes out?
Yeah.
So what's your thoughts on it and where do you think UFC will go from now? My story, Making a Murderer.
Ooh.
Is back. We were going to talk about this about 2 or 3 weeks ago, weren't we? And we ended up lost in conversation on a podcast.
With Jalab, I believe.
I think it was the
Jalab.
But it's timed well because a new trailer has dropped again this week for season 2 of Making a Murderer, which I believe October 19th is when it arrives on Netflix.
Yes, it is October 19th.
We both watched it a long time ago, didn't we? I think I was still late to it, but not soon after it came out. You've watched it recently, haven't you?
Yeah, I've only just finished it a couple of weeks ago.
Which will be good.
Did he do it?
You'll be fresher in the mind of it. So I just wanted to sort of say, before season three starts, what are our thoughts on the whole situation? What do you think after watching the trailer for season two? Because what's cool about season two, I don't know if you've seen the trailer, but it's based around, I don't know her name, but a lady who, she basically takes on his case, and she is famous for overturning charges that are already in place. And she basically says at the end of the trailer, says like, if he's done it, I fail. So, and apparently it says in the thing that there's going to be a big few plot twists that come in this story.
Here's the issue, is that we know she fails.
Because he's still in.
He's still in.
Yeah, but do you know what the actual situation is at the moment? Has he got hearing coming up or anything like
that? He's still in prison. That's
Do you know if there's any...
And they shot that series a year ago.
But the, an interesting one is that Brendan Dassey's case...
He's
is
out.
Supposedly, yeah, he's out now, isn't he?
Dassey's
so,
out.
So there is something that's happened somewhere. Brendan which makes Dassey. You think if... But if the Brendan Dassey case has fallen away, that's a big part of what had Stephen in.
Yeah.
And then another thing to consider here, because I thought this was interesting... is on the trailer, her, one of her big points that she makes on the argument is that the what do they call it? The
Self-control.
Prosecution, the people who are
prosecuting. Yeah.
Their biggest argument was that Teresa, what's her name?
Holbeck.
Yeah, never left the compound, the Avery compound, whatever it was. But her phone pings off a cell tower after that, a long way away.
Miles away.
Which when you first hear it, you go, oh God, that's... That seems to make it clear that she's not. But I will say this, if you've ever listened to Serial, do you ever listen to Serial?
No.
The podcast. It was one of those first big things that blew up about this true crime thing.
Yeah.
It's really good to listen to if you get the chance. But it's basically a podcast that tells a story of a guy called Adnan, who, similar thing, was put away for murder. And it's interesting because the Serial is told by, I believe it's a journalist, and it's a little bit more story-like.
It's their conversation with each other, isn't it?
So she's basically, I think, a friend of his through people and looks into his case, and it doesn't look like it's right what's happened. Yeah. But then what followed Serial, once that had finished, was another podcast that started called Undisclosed, where three people in the law industry, so I think it's like a one solicitor, one barrister, whatever, they start looking at the case as it's going forward. And what they do is they look at a section, and then the next episode does like case law about that.
Okay.
So it says, this is what happened in other cases, this is what's happening here. And it's really interesting how a lot of things tie into similar officers from the case keep popping up of doing the same things.
Because that's what big thing reason, making a murderer. There's like two or three police officers that are continuously involved.
It's this Link fella, Lieutenant Link, where he just keeps popping up. It's like he was always on the scene and he's always like tampering with shit.
I'll say this though, it's just this is the reason I brought up Serial.
Yeah.
On the trailer for season two of Making a Murderer, they say about the cell phone tower pinging, meaning, oh, he couldn't have done it. But in Serial and in Undisclosed, Adnan, one of the biggest things that puts him away is them saying his cell phone pinged off a tower right by where the murder took place. But cell companies, after the case had all been done, got in touch and said, "This you can't, supposedly, you can't use cell phone tower pings in a court case, because I could be standing next to a tower here, make a phone call, and it will ping off 110 miles away.
Right.
It's not relevant to where you are, supposedly.
Right, okay.
So when I was watching the trailer, I was like, that doesn't really make a case if that's the same.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then again, it's America, so laws change.
Yeah, I mean, having watched it, like, it was clear that he's not an innocent man in general. Whether he's innocent of that crime... Cool.
Well, he threw a cat on a fire.
That's what I'm talking about. He's obviously a weird freak.
He's messed up.
Yeah. Like, he's obviously...
But it's a strange place as well.
Yeah, it is.
It's a very strange place.
it's a little bit.
They all have maybe three brain cells between all of them. Like, this Brendan Dassey. Brendan Dassey, what's wrong with him?
Yeah. Like, just wanted to get home and watch WrestleMania. Poor kid.
Like, yeah, it's a mad series though. Like, if you haven't watched it, you probably have by now because we've been banging on about it for about a year now on this channel.
But so, do you think he did it?
So,
that's the question we need answered for this story.
So, I think, I don't think he did. I think there's like a much bigger, I think there's someone out there that's got away with an incredible crime somewhere. But, I'm almost a romantic with things like this. I want that
but
to
the
be
reason,
the case.
The reason it's conceivable to think that he didn't do it is because he's already done 18 years for something he didn't do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think
I agree. I don't think he did it. I don't think he did it. He's not smart enough, especially with the last murder, to clear that crime scene of all blood. You know, when they do the UV thing, there's no specks of blood.
Well, there was supposedly...
They dug up the floor, the concrete floor.
Isn't, because, you know, they claim the whole thing is that she was tied to a bed and murdered
and
there.
Lacerated, and there's
not a single drop of blood in the room.
Yeah, but apparently there's evidence from the first case that the documentary left out.
Potentially.
One of them is that her blood is in his car.
No, his blood was always in her car.
No, there's... Okay, maybe it's not that, though, but there was a thing, I watched the thing afterwards, where apparently there's, like, one or two key pieces of evidence on the prosecution side that were left out of the documentary.
I'm sure that's always going to be the case.
I don't know what they are, so I can't say, but...
But, yeah, I'm going to say he didn't do it.
I don't think he did it. For the biggest thing is that if you come out of 18 years in prison for a crime you didn't do...
Why murder someone?
Yeah. And you're paid out for it, because he got paid handsomely for being wrongly accused... I just don't understand why then you then go and murder someone.
But I also don't think he's stupid. Like, he's stupid, but I don't think he's stupid enough to go then burn her in front of his house. You don't think he's that dumb.
Especially when you know there's eyes on you in that town.
I don't think he's that stupid.
But if you haven't seen it, incredible series. I just want to bring it up because it's obviously been in the news because the trailer's come out.
Yeah.
And I think what we should do is probably watch Making a Murderer when season 2 comes out.
Yeah, mate.
And almost do some reaction videos or whatever to it. If you want to see that, then let us know.
That'd be sick.
I agree.
Joe?
What are you telling us?
My story. I'm bringing Man United to the table this week.
Oh, yeah?
I want to get some stuff off my chest about Man United.
Yeah? You want to grind your gears?
I want to grind my gears. I do it every so often on Football Daily. So a few of the Football Daily fans that are watching at home will already know my opinions on some of the stuff that's going on at Man United. Mm-hmm. But right now, the club is nothing short of a disgrace. It's an absolute joke from top to bottom, rotten to the core.
Let's say you've got 3 points. What are the three things wrong?
Oh, I can't do it in 3 points.
Five.
There's a number of points. We'll start with the Glazers.
Okay.
The Glazers are a massive issue at Manchester United.
What's the issue there?
The issue is the consistent funneling of money out into their own purses to pay off personal debt.
Okay.
That's the main issue.
Proven?
100% proven. Okay. They take about, I think that we're in about £600 million worth of debt.
That's mad.
That basically is Glazer debt. So we are in debt because Glazers have debt. Because our owners are in debt, we're in debt. So whenever we turn huge profit, they take sort of 40% to pay debt.
But you're a publicly traded company, aren't you? So how's that possible?
Because the Glazers are the shareholders, major shareholders.
So they are just allowed to do with it what they please?
Not what they please, but they take a large chunk of it, for their own gain. And also, when they first bought the club, they bought the club when we had 0% debt and bought it with their own debt on their back. Man United immediately inherited debt from the Glazers.
Wow.
So that's a massive issue. And
so that's point one.
People will be saying at home, well, you know, they've still invested massively in Manchester United. They've still bought loads of players, 300, 400 million over the last few years. They have bought money. I have no issue with how they've bought money. But how they've set up the club and how they have continually funneled money out of it is an absolute mess. If you look at the types of clubs like Manchester City, who have a coherent business and sporting strategy, they're... input and their investment in the company is like 4-5x Manchester United's, which is unbelievably bad.
Okay, so that's your point one.
Point number one. Second point is sporting strategy at Manchester United is non-existent. There is none, which is a mess. All the club is there to do is to make money for the Glazers and for the board. You've got a previous investment banker in charge of sporting wellness at the club in Ed Woodward. Now, Ed Woodward is crushing it in terms of commercial revenue, crushing it in terms of numbers. I think we made 650 million last year. And when you think, let's say, something like a Chelsea, Man City, or an Arsenal, looking like 200, 300 million.
Jesus.
So we're like doubling up pretty much.
Is this because of you having stuff like you've got wine sponsors?
Yeah,
and
he's a genius at this stuff. We're talking like Yokohama tire sponsors, Chevrolet, training sponsors, arms sponsors, shirt sponsors.
Any area he can get you in to get a sponsor, you're in it.
Except for the stadium name. He still hasn't sold the stadium name. And when that gets sold, they chuck another 100 million on top of that as well, because that will sell for a lot of money if that ever happens. God forbid it doesn't.
I think Manchester United back to one of those clubs anyway, though. You could sell the stadium name. People are just still going to call it Old Trafford. So I wouldn't worry about that too much.
Yeah, but it's that would be another move.
It's like when it was the Sports Direct Arena. It's
100%, but it would still be another move towards a negative aspect of the club.
But that was made, as it?
Yeah, I know.
Same as the Etihad, isn't it? I think if you've got an established stadium name, it's like if Chelsea sold their naming rights, it's still Stamford Bridge.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but for Manchester United fans, that would be a massive issue.
Yeah, it would.
Because we're 100%. Already... this is the biggest problem I'm trying to make here, is that we are built as a club to make money.
We
are no longer built as a club to win and perform well.
Right. That's very much how I felt about Arsenal as well. Like,
all the time.
Stages, yeah.
But do you not think that at some point, for a football club, there surely is a ceiling to the level of business you can bring in without performing well on the pitch?
Not with Man United. It's too big. The fan base of Manchester United is too big for that to happen.
So if you were owning it, surely you would look at it. I would imagine that you would look at it and say, let's say you're making a billion, surely you'd look at it and go, well, if we also add to this investment there, which means that we're winning the Premier League and we're in the running to win the Champions League, that becomes 1.5.
Potentially, but the issue is that our profit has increased exponentially over the last 6 years and our performance on the pitch has deteriorated.
Right, okay.
So if you actually look at sort of
they need to
a
be
level chart, that doesn't seem to be the
correlate,
case.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem to correlate.
What's your thoughts on Mourinho?
I'll come to Mourinho in a minute. Okay. I'll come to Mourinho in a minute because Ed Woodward is an issue. Ed Woodward needs to stay at the club. I actually tweeted the other day saying Woodward out. That was probably me being rash when we were 2-0 down to Newcastle. Ed Woodward's fine staying at the club. Commercial director, sound. Bring in 400 million a year, earn your money. But there needs to be a sporting director in charge of the club's vision and what we are. Mm. Previously, when David Gill was in charge of the club, in the Sir Alex Ferguson days, it worked really well because he handled sporting operations and Ferguson handled on-the-pitch operations. Now that David Gill has left and been replaced by Ed Woodward, you've lost all of the sporting element of that side.
It's all money, it's all commercial.
It's absolutely disastrous. It's all money and commercial. So what will happen is, I'd imagine over the next 3 to 6 months, United will appoint a sporting director. Mm. It probably will be... I don't know. Potentially the ex-Juventus sporting director will come in. But whoever he is, he needs to be the one to appoint the manager. It can't be the manager gets appointed and then we appoint the sporting director.
Yeah,
the sporting director is the one that has to set out the vision for the team. Because
pick the guy he wants to do it.
Exactly. Because he needs to be saying, this is our philosophy. This is how we're going to play football. This is going to be our youth policy. Yeah. This is the style of play we're going to put in place.
Let's say you get the Juventus guy. Who do you reckon is the manager he goes for?
I don't know. It's difficult. Potentially Allegri.
You reckon?
But that'll completely depend on who we go. Yeah, I love Allegri.
Yeah.
There's a few other names. The Monaco sporting director's been bandied about, which would make sense, especially now Leonardo Jardim's available.
Yeah, he's just gone, isn't he?
But
was that yesterday?
Yeah, that was yesterday. But the issue is that with no sporting director, the manager can basically do what he wants. And that is what we saw this summer when Ed Woodward vetoed free transfers put in place by Jose Mourinho. So Jose Mourinho clearly wanted a centre-back. Everybody knows he wanted a centre-back. He wanted one of Toby Alderweireld or basically a senior centre-back to come in and lead the side, which is the right thing to do. We needed a centre-back. The trouble is Woodward vetoed all the transfers because we would have had to pay so much to get Toby Alderweireld, but Mourinho's only thinking short-term. So Mourinho just wants to win trophies now. Mm. Woodward's thinking long-term strategy. So it's like those two, they don't work. That
heads.
Clash, that doesn't work. And then that becomes detrimental on the pitch. You see Mourinho struggle this season, and he would have done better with a centre-back, but his vision doesn't align with the club's vision.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, you need to look at who's setting the vision, Woodward, which is wrong because it should be a sporting director setting the vision. Mm. And if the manager's line lines up with that sporting director, which Jose's wouldn't with a sporting director because he's all about short term. So Woodward needs to move out. We need a sporting director and then Mourinho's got to go. Mourinho's got to go because he doesn't align with the philosophies of the club. A lot of people say that he shouldn't be given the right to spend money. I actually think Mourinho... there's a few flaws in that argument.
Why?
People were like, oh, you know, he bought Lindelof, why let him buy another centre-half? Mm. Well, if we're working on that logic, it doesn't make sense. Because Pep Guardiola, let's say Pep Guardiola spent, what, 20 million on Claudio Bravo, does that mean he shouldn't have been allowed to spend 40 million on Edison, who's now come in and crushed it? The issue is the philosophy, not the manager's or the scout's incorrect call on a player.
Pep buying Bravo was a short-term fix for the fact that he Hart just wasn't his guy at all, was it?
Yeah.
And he needed who was available, who could play out from the back.
Every manager's made some howling transfers.
Exactly.
Ferguson made some howling transfers.
Ferguson made loads of howling transfers. But the issue would be is if the sporting director had selected him, then it would be no issue.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's the manager like vetoing scouts, the scouts vetoing managers.
Yeah.
There's no cohesion there. That's all got to come from a sporting director.
What about
he's
on the pitch?
He's got to go. On the pitch, his philosophy, his tactics are all wrong. He manages his players really poorly.
Mm.
A manager that was once known for getting the best out of players, improving players.
Oh, God, you look at that, even Porto, but you look at that Chelsea side. His players would have died for him.
Yeah. Yeah, and the reason his players would have died for him is because he would have died for his players.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And in the press, if a journalist attacked his players at Chelsea in 04, 05, he would have died for that player.
Lacerations.
Now, he's dying for himself.
Yeah, that's true.
He will protect himself at all costs, whether that means throwing players under the bus. I look at people who say, well, you know, these players don't respect Jose Mourinho. How can Pogba come out publicly and say he's done this, he's done that? Well, I'm sorry, but Jose has to take into account what he's done. Mm. I've seen him publicly slate Eric Bailly, Phil Jones, Victor Lindelof, Luke Shaw, Antonio Valencia, Martial, Pogba, Rashford, Sanchez.
Who did he do on the weekend?
Rashford. We're up to like 11 players here. He's publicly battered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when one player comes out and moans about a system, he's held to his own standards now, Jose, because he has himself come out and publicly done that. Yeah. If it was the other way around and he'd been closed ranks and everything, well, it's us versus them, I'd agree. But it's not. That's not been the case. So you've got lack of management amongst the players, lack of management from the board, lack of management from the owners. It's just a mess. Start by getting rid of Jose. Got to go. Then employ a sporting director and let that sporting director pick the manager. Whoever it is, might be Leo Jardim. Cool, get Leo Jardim in if you think that's the right way to play. You want to play attacking football with a young side. Leo Jardim's the perfect manager. There's a few players, let's have it right, that have to go.
Like?
Got to go. We've got so many players out of contract in the summer. It's scary.
Yeah, I saw you tweet that yesterday. It was crazy.
David De Gea, get the list up of the players out of contract in the summer. It's unbelievable.
Some of them have
got a year extension. But this list is incredible.
So United players out of contract in the summer, although some have year extension clauses in their contract. David De Gea, Phil Jones, Chris Smalling, Antonio Valencia, Matteo Darmian, Luke Shaw, Ashley Young, Herrera, Pereira, Mata and Martial.
Absolutely unacceptable.
Brilliant.
That's also the photo that's
posted with that tweet.
Quality.
The boys?
That many players out of contract in the summer is a mess.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So what you need to do is get rid of some of those players. Some of those players I would let go fairly happily, i.e. Phil Jones, Smalling, Matteo Darmian. Move them on. Deadwood at the club. But there needs to be the strategy from the sporting director as the contacts we're going to renew. Give David De Gea £1 million a week. I don't care. Best goalkeeper in the world. Pay him whatever you have to get him to sign a new contract. You cannot let him go. And so Anthony Martial cannot let him go, especially on a free. This is like a 70, £80 million player.
Yeah.
You're letting go.
And also, especially not to another team in the league.
That will become a business decision for Man United and they will just renew that contract.
Yeah.
Just to sell him.
Even if Mourinho doesn't like him, they will renew the contract to make a profit. They're not going to let £80 million slip down the net. Especially when they paid 50 for him in the first place with bonuses. So he'll sign a new contract and then go out and sign players to fit the system that is approved by the sporting director and the manager.
Mm.
So let me ask you, are they your main points covered?
Pretty much, yeah. And also, just one more point. The players should be bloody thankful for Paul Pogba because he takes all of the shit from the media.
He takes the brunt of
didn't take the brunt of it. He takes all of it, Paul Pogba. He takes all of it and he is our best player.
Yeah.
But he takes all of it because none of the others are newsworthy.
If you were Paul Pogba, would you be looking for a move away?
Yes. I would not be. If I was David De Gea, I'd be looking. If I was David De Gea, the best keeper in the world, why would I be at Man United?
But would a new sporting director and a new manager make you reconsider and want to stay?
It depends the philosophy, doesn't it?
In a similar way to
Maurizio Sarri taking over with Eden Hazard, I would have said Eden Hazard's gone.
Mm.
But Maurizio Sarri comes in, exciting, fun brand of football, reinvigorates Hazard to a level. Hazard's probably now torn between Madrid and I really want Madrid, but look at how I'm playing under Sarri and how Sarri's playing as a team.
Okay, so, because we're running close on time here, so I just want to ask you this. Let's say, you might know the answer to this, but let's say you're given your reign to do, I'll give you this, you can buy three players, and what would you adopt with the United team in terms of how you'd want them to play?
Right, let me find the name of the Juventus sporting director. But
where are the three positions that you think straight up that you need to strengthen?
Centre-half, surely.
Yeah.
Yeah, centre-back. Right back, I'll give Luke Shaw his dues because he started pretty poorly this season, I thought, but he's actually, after the first game, he's turned it around. And I actually batted him on a show before and I said he's not good enough for Man United. I'm going to take that back because he's actually turned it around for me. Valencia's got to go. Wow. Got to go. The centre backs are a mess. Yeah, he's the captain. He wasn't even on the squad on the weekend.
That's also amazing. Mental. United's never been a team where, like, you always know United's captain. It's always such a strong force.
Yeah,
and Valencia just doesn't scream there.
Yeah.
But look at it. Same with Arsenal, though.
Yeah.
Same with Arsenal. Who was our last serious captain? Mata Saka.
Really?
He was terrible.
Yeah, captains aren't as important.
That was after Arteta. Because the last thing I think of as knowing it is Arteta.
Anyway.
And Mata Saka wasn't playing as well.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Centre back, right back.
Give you five if you need five.
He's taking us like a spine.
Defensive midfield.
Yeah. Like a
Right wing.
If you could pick any of in each one in each.
So I'll go from the top down. I would, if I was United, I'd go out. Giuseppe Moratti's just left Juventus as the overall the top dog for CEO effectively. I would take him, I'd go and pay Paratici whatever he wants, the sporting director of Juventus. That club is run like a well-oiled machine. Mm-hmm. Knows exactly what it is. The signings are unbelievable and the sales are unbelievable. Mm. How they're able to get Ronaldo in for money like 80 million is outrageous. Mm. So I'd get Paratici in and I'd get Giuseppe Moratta in. Let them pick who they want. That might well be Zidane, if they think Zidane's the right philosophy for them.
I like Allegri, though. I agree with you on that.
I love Allegri. I'd love Allegri as well. It also gives you forward planning, because that means they know who they want to... They'll already have a list of managers if your manager was to leave tomorrow. United, if he went tomorrow, United would be going, give it Carrick. Yeah, Carrick will get the job on like a 5-6 game basis.
Yeah.
So I'd have those two in. Let them pick the manager. I would sign a decent young centre-back, hard to find in the market.
Difficult,
not easy. I actually don't know where to start. I maybe wouldn't even go for a young centre back. I'd maybe go for somebody like Kalidou Koulibaly. But we've got players like Davinson Sanchez. Eric Bailly in a Pochettino system would probably not be that different to Davinson Sanchez. But he's got no support with him. So I'd take Kalidou Koulibaly potentially at centre back. Defensive midfield, I'd take Ruben Neves from Wolves.
Mm.
He's going to go to Man City in January and he's going to be outrageous under Pep Guardiola.
What about Emeni Benatia at centre back?
No.
Right back. We're running really close on time, so it's no clue.
Apparently Carvajal's available. I'll take Carvajal.
Right, okay. And then your right winger.
Either play Alexis Sanchez there or sell him, get him out of the club because he's eating up wages. And I would probably play a front three of Rashford, Martial, Lukaku if I could. There's a front three, but clearly, they don't want to play Rashford or Martial on the right-hand side. So, I would probably go... I don't know. I actually don't know.
What about Dembele? Who's been Dembele? Something like that.
Too expensive. Yeah. He costs so much money. Vile amount of money.
Yeah, he would.
I don't know who's taking the right wing. I don't know.
Thoughts on United?
Bring back Memphis to pay, maybe.
That's not bad. But is he not playing striker at the moment for Lyon?
He kind of just drifts where he wants.
He's been playing well. Thoughts on United? I mean, I'll be honest with you, I'm not the person to ask on this, but growing up, they were one of my favourite teams to watch because of Bex. And as much as I hate them as like fans, like some of their fans really grind my gears. But I used to enjoy watching them play. I really like them as a team, so it's kind of sad to see that they're floating around mid-table. Yeah,
United used to always be, you could rely on them for a good brand of football. It's interesting that's not the case now.
Yeah, exactly.
I think what we what we're
done
thinking.
It, well, let's just ask the people what their thoughts are.
Yeah, let us know your thoughts.
Joe's had his off my chest now. It's 11 in the morning. I can relax for the rest of the day. I've had my rant about Man United. I'm a daily rant about Man United.
Let us know what you think about Manchester United.
And about Khabib and McGregor as well.
Yeah. Yep.
And about making a murderer.
Yeah, all three. Yeah. Thank you, chaps.
That's it, isn't it?
For this early morning. Well, not so early morning.
You're off to Giacomo shoot now. I know you're running pretty close on time, so we will let you go. So, thanks for listening with your ears and watching with your eyes.
Ooh,
we'll catch you next week.
Bye.